We are locked and loaded on a Monday morning. Jason Molica, you know him well, Fox News Radio, and of course, part of that great educational institution of all the great work he does over at American University in the nation's capital, the aforementioned Jason Molica. Great to have you. Been a while, but I tell you, couldn't get much crazier than this final week, Jason.
It's the final weeks, regardless of what time of year it is and when we are, what time of period we are in, it's always crazy leading up to the last days before a presidential election.
No question about it. 58 million Americans voting so far. I tell you, it's interesting with the mail-ins and everything else. The numbers could exceed anything we've ever seen before. I guess the last one, they're talking about 1908, in which they have seen these types of numbers. I mean, that's unbelievable. You know, when you think about 65% as far as the voting public compared to 56%, I mean, these are impressive numbers and only accentuate the fact that people are more engaged now than ever. It's unbelievable, but it's true.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the things that we've seen, obviously, is, you know, we're in an unprecedented time during a pandemic, and, you know, people had, a few more options than they really probably were aware of in the past. And, I think people are energized. You know, people are looking at the issues that are around both candidates, not just one or the other. And they're motivated to vote. They want to make sure that their voices are heard. And this is the way it should be, really. You know, people should feel motivated, regardless of whether it's a presidential election or whether it's your local elections. I mean, people should feel like they have a voice in deciding who is going to represent them and who's going to, in this case, lead the country for the next 4 years, whether it's President Trump or former Vice President Biden.
No question. I would think there might have been a couple of gasps yesterday within the administration when the White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows, on CNN's State of the Union, pretty much stated we're not going to control the pandemic. All amidst this surge in COVID-19 cases across the country, if COVID is at the top of the charts right now, as far as if this president gets another term, maybe you can look back as far as a Mark Meadows comment on a Sunday on the 25th of October. What do you think about that?
Well, I think at the one point you could say they understand that they're not going to, the Trump administration realizes that they're not going to be able to either control the message or control the pandemic itself, so it's about mitigation. The problem is the way it came off there on Sunday was that, you know, regardless of their, you know, obviously in the Pence campaign, there was a positive test that the administration feels like, okay, this is what it is right now. We're not going to be able to control this, then we might as well just, you know, do what we need to do for the next few weeks as far as a campaign goes. I mean, it wouldn't be the message that I would want to send the American people, regardless of whether it was right before the election or whether it was, you know, in February of 2020 or 21. I don't think I want anybody in the administration giving out a message to the American people that we're not going to control this, because I think that just leads to more confusion and more frustration. You know, people want answers. I know the president's been saying that, you know, there's a vaccine around the corner. But I think the medical experts have said, even with that even though there may be a vaccine, whether it's at the end of this year or early into next, there is still going to be time to make sure that it gets out. So in the meantime, the administration should be making sure from a messaging standpoint that, hey, you know, we're going to do our best to try to at least contain this. But when you have someone, a major voice in the administration, saying we're not even going to try to contain it, that doesn't send a good message to the American people.
I kind of agree, especially when we got a surge of cases. 40 states right now are seeing very high numbers, hospitalizations and whatnot here. And you're closing in on, 225,000 deaths. Tough one to say, no question about it. You know, I wrote down six states this morning for you, Jason. Pennsylvania, Florida, Wisconsin, Michigan, Arizona, Ohio. Obviously, they'll decide this election. 59, 69, 75, 86, 90, 104 electorals at stake with the numbers, electoral numbers there. 270, of course, folks, it takes to win this election. You know, I still circle, and listen, I've been saying Pennsylvania will be the linchpin, but I tell you, it's tough to get around Michigan, because if you go back to 2016 and you saw Hillary Clinton lose the state, first time a Democrat lost that state in 35 years, and 16 electoral votes at stake, Jason Mollica, it's very tough to bypass that state of Michigan right now.
It is, and I know there are a lot of, you know, depending on what you end up reading or what people are reading, you know, it shows how, you know, it shows currently, you know, Vice President, former Vice President Biden leading in Wisconsin and Michigan. But that being said, you know, I think we've learned from 2016 that even if a poll says that so-and-so is leading in this state and at this point in time, I think the bottom line for me is that, yeah, when you look at a place like Michigan, you look at a place like Pennsylvania, you have to make sure, I mean, you have to, as a candidate, I don't think you can rest on your laurels and say, okay, well, I'm leading in this state, so I'm going to bypass it. As we get closer and closer to Election Day, both campaigns are going to realize that if they're within the margin of error, they're going to have to make sure that they are, you know, fortifying votes in some way. I agree with you as far as Pennsylvania. That's definitely a state that, you know, Vice President Biden needs to win, but it's also a state that the president needs to win if he's looking to, you know, become a two-term president potentially. So I think when I'm looking at Michigan, I'm looking at a state that, as I see it right now, you know, I don't think Vice President Biden could just rest on his laurels there. I think that's a state that he needs to make sure that if he's not there, then someone of strength in his campaign, whether it's the former president, President Obama, whether it's it ends up being Kamala Harris, or if it's even, you know, former Vice President Biden that goes to the state, if he's looking to really win that and potentially, you know, take it and its electoral votes, he's got to show some strength there in the sense of showing up, spreading his message, and making sure that they are doing the right things to shore up votes in the state. And the same goes for Pennsylvania. I mean, that's his, you know, obviously he touts that as his home state, even though he represented Delaware. If he doesn't carry his own state, I think that's a bad sign for his night when it comes to Election Day.
Jason Mollica with us, Fox News Radio, and of course part of the great institution of American University. Let me take you back about a week ago, just about, where we had the final debate, Jason. And I'll tell you this much, you know, a much calmer President Trump in his demeanor. And, you know, when it was all said and done, I felt it was a terrible night for Joe Biden. I really did. He gave you a lot of back and forth. The president basically stated, you know, and I thought it was kind of the line of the evening. I looked at it objectively, I really did. You know, the fact that he only went into this game of this political landscape because they didn't do the job, meaning Obama and Biden. Therefore, he felt compelled. And basically, the only answer you got from a Biden was, well, you had a Republican-controlled Congress. And that didn't sit well with me at all, because even if that's the case, you have to find a way to negotiate properly in order to, for the work of the American people. I just thought it was a terrible evening overall. Lots of answers in that kind of cloudy form regarding a Joe Biden. Really didn't give you a lot of definitive nature of the night on his behalf. What'd you think of that night as far as the final debate in Nashville?
Well, I thought it was obviously, it was the more calm of the two face-to-face ones that they have had. And obviously the, you know, the third would have been, there would have been a third or a second in a sense, but it turned into two separate town halls. I think from the perspective, if you were an undecided voter, I don't think that debate ended up telling you, okay, I'm going one way or the other. I think there were a lot of things that, you know, honestly, was it Vice President or former Vice President Biden's best debate performance ever? Probably not. You know, and I also think looking at it from the perspective of, you know, President Trump, there are a lot of things that he said that weren't able to be, or things that he has said in the past that have been shown to be not necessarily, you know, 110% correct. But I think when you're looking at these sort of debates, and the two that they've had, I think in this time around, from my perspective and watching it, was that at least you had an idea without all of the craziness of where each of them were coming from. By now we know about President Trump. We are very well aware of his feelings on a lot of things, a lot of the topics, the main topics that were brought up that night. And we're pretty sure about where Vice President Biden stands on all of these as well. To me, it came down to, was there, like you said, there was that moment where you heard President Trump saying, you're the reason why I got into the race. And yes, there's a lot of reasons why people were running, you know, 4 years ago, because obviously, you know, the Obama administration had its two terms, you know, who would be the next Democratic candidate. And obviously Hillary won the popular vote, but didn't win the Electoral College, obviously. So, you know, President Trump was clearly trying to make sure that if he could take any sort of put a dent in the armor of former Vice President Biden during that debate, that probably was the one moment where he kind of, you know, stung him. If you look at it as a boxing match, that was one where he got him with an uppercut that he wasn't ready for. And, you know, at the end of the night, I think, like you had said, you know, that was something that was striking. It was a moment that stood out for me when I watched it, and I heard that, and I thought, okay, you know, that's something that if President Trump had, if he did that more of sort of that sort of debate type of thing, if he was being more of the, this is why I decided to run 4 years ago, instead of the other sort of bravado type things that he's done. And I know people expect that, but I think if he was more focused on the message and he continued to pound people, we've seen that in politics before, where candidates will really, really hit their opponent with, hey, the reason why I'm running, or the reason why we're in this mess is because of A, B, C, D, and E. And it's specific things that really hit a candidate. And it's a matter of the people that are up, you know, either following that candidate, or even in this case, if it's a President Trump, the people that are supporting him, these are the things they need to continue to say in the last weeks. It's like, this is, you know, the reason why President Trump ran was because of the Obama administration. They, you know, left our country XYZ. And I think that's where they could be more effective. That being said, a lot of the things that are said on the campaign post-debate haven't really focused on that. It's been more, you've heard more about the coronavirus, obviously, and some other things. So, to come back to the beginning here, I do agree with you. I think that was one moment during the debate where it really hit former Vice President Biden, and that should be something that the Trump campaign should really try to capitalize on the best that they can.
We are talking with Jason Mollock of Fox News Radio, and again, part of the great American University in the nation's capital. Jason does great work there. Final thought on my end here, and again, you know, listen, the polls will indicate right now, although I'm not a big poll believer, to me it's a snapshot in time. I've said that since day one. But with that being said, Jason, if Trump loses this thing, you could certainly put the onus on COVID, how he's handled it. I mean, the latest has 60%+ of the American public dissatisfied with the way this man has handled the coronavirus. If you are his advisors, why have him harp on saying a vaccine is around the corner, it's going away, when the numbers indicate it is not? We are firmly in a second wave right now. If you are part of this whole situation, wouldn't you try to somehow derail him from saying things like that? Because really, that just emphasizes the failure of what's happening from a national standpoint right now with this coronavirus.
Yeah, it's 100%, Jay. I mean, that's the one of the many things that has baffled me through this whole, this whole messaging around the coronavirus with the Trump administration's response has been, you know, is basically from the start, oh, it's going to go away. It's disappearing. There's a vaccine. Yes, there is a vaccine, but it may come at the end of the year. It may not. And I think the problem that the administration has right now is they have, you know, President Trump has stuck to his guns in the sense here of saying, you know, he's been saying the same things about it. It's going to go away. I don't, you know, obviously in the Woodward book or the audio that came out, it's like, I didn't want to scare the American people. And from that perspective, you know, right now, it's sort of like trying to get out of a fly trap, and you're already stuck, and there's no way of getting out of it. And would I try to temper the president in these last days before the election to say, you know what, we've been trying to work with the experts, we've been trying to do the best things that we could do, and I would make sure that his messaging was more, you know, kind of comes to the middle, or at least leaning on the positive thing. Look, folks, you know, there may not be a vaccine coming, but we're going to make sure in a second term that's the first thing we do, is we make sure that vaccine is getting done. The problem is that the people, at least like you said, and I'm agreeing with you when it comes to polls. I'm very tempered with polls. I take them, you like you said, snapshot in time. But the one thing that we know is that when we've seen one term presidents, the one thing that ends up getting them is something that they've either promised or hasn't come true, or they've been trying to work towards, or there's a message that continues to, be hammered home by their opponent, and they just can't overcome it. So I agree with you that the messaging about the coronavirus has really been one of President Trump's very big downfalls. And it's a matter now of whether the American people, even though polls are obviously saying that, you know, they don't approve of his handling of it, we'll find out on Election Day if those polls were actually, you know, the people that they talked to ended up voting the other way instead of voting for President Trump. So the president's in a tough spot here with this messaging and how he's handled it. And sure, I mean, he's tried to listen. He said he listens to the medical experts, but then to say that, and then on the other hand, say something totally different, like we saw this weekend on his stops, he was, you know, talking about COVID, and he downplayed it. And that's not something that may play well for a crowd there and for his really strong base, but I think for a good number of the American public, especially those who have lost people to the virus, that's not going to be the best way to win votes.
And again, on the other side, and I've said this all along, you know, if you are a Biden supporter, you know, you got to honestly think about his career. 47 years, can you get the job done in 4 years? Is this all talk, what you're saying over the last several months? You know, crime bill 1994, part of an agenda that really never really moved the needle in a big way. Listen, you know, you got to honestly ask yourself, is Joe Biden the guy who's going to get it done? You know, a possible Bernie Sanders manifesto, handing off the baton, that type of thing, progressive nature and everything else following that agenda. You know, these are tough questions right now. So, you know, listen. As I've said all along, it's almost a pick-your-poison type of thing right now. It's a tough one. But you know what, Jason? The bottom line is 58 million votes in the books, and that's what counts. Give me a final word here.
That's very good. You know, it's something that has really amazed me coming from the voting side of things, already counted, or at least already people that have already voted. And that to me during this time is just, I think we'll look back at this. I already know we'll look back at this in history and say, you know, this little point in time and where we are with the coronavirus, with the way things are going on, it's been sort of the perfect storm of people being able to get out and vote and say, all right, my vote is important. But I think, you know, coming back to where you said about, you know, kind of the pick your poison side of things, I don't think anybody, you know, as well as it appears that Vice President Biden is doing right now, or former Vice President Biden is doing right now, even though he was considered somewhat a favorite in our times talking in the past earlier this year, he wasn't even leading in the polls. There were other people that were ahead of him. He was stumbling. And it wasn't until South Carolina that it really took off for him. So Is he the perfect candidate for the Democratic Party? No, absolutely not. But he is right now the person that is the nominee and potentially could be the next president of the United States. So it all comes down to, regardless of that sort of Hollywood look of there's always, you know, who's the perfect candidate? Who's going to be the next person that we can look at? And I think the bottom line comes down to there's never a perfect candidate. There's always someone that, or some part of a candidate that we know that the American people aren't happy with. It's a matter of whether that candidate can fully bring the country to a point of, okay, we're focusing on the coronavirus and getting a vaccine, and until then we need to do mitigation measures. And then we have to do this step about the economy. And if he can accomplish that as president, then it will have been a successful, potentially successful 4 years. But I think you're right when you look at it from a point of, you know, what will we see as far as an economy? What will we see as far as, you know, when he gets in? And even though he's done told people that on the campaign, it's a matter of, can it actually get done? Presidents promise, people that want to run for the presidency promise a lot of things to the American people. There are a lot of things that don't get done when they end up getting in office, though.
And you're right. At Jim Clyburg announcement, that endorsement, Jason, remember that that late night before the former vice president went on his trek, and that seemed to really inject a lot of juice into that campaign. Game changing, and no question about it, without question. So we'll keep an eye on things as we get on the stretch, and we look forward to having you on in and around. Can't thank you enough for a couple of minutes this morning.
Not a problem. It's going to be an exciting, as always, lead up to Election Day. So I look forward to talking to you again soon.